ready.
Thought you already took it.
I pushed it down that entire time. That's how shitty this camera is.
Boys, don't ruin the Comic-Con atmosphere. You can hear all these people clamoring for us to record.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they're chanting G4. I mean, talk radar.
G4. Yeah, it turns out they thought they were giving them a new iPhone, and they're chanting 4G. You can't hear it. Man, that was a very vaudevillian-esque joke.
That was.
Somebody pull me off the stage with a cane. anyway, we're going to do an interview special here.
Comic-Con 2010.
Comic-Con, because we're all so very tired and want to get the hell out of here.
Yes.
So we've done our damnedest to get as many interviews for you as humanly possible. What's something at Comic-Con you're really tired of?
I'm tired of lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers.
I like lollygaggers.
People who walk slowly and with their heads down, like it's just like the people you hate in high school.
Yeah.
That would not get the hell out of your way when you're trying to get to your class.
Tyler Mild.
God, what do I hate at Comic-Con? Can I say everything? Is that allowed? No, I like Comic-Con.
Yeah.
You pulled the I'm fucking press card today. That was fun.
I did, yeah. The security is kind of rough because I get there just doing their job. They've been hired to keep people away from important celebrities like
Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
Models.
Yeah, well, we're sandwiched in between Warner Brothers and G4. And, like, at any given moment, like right now, they're doing a Human Target signing, which I can't imagine anyone cares about.
Holy shit. Earlier
it was V, and then Vampire Diaries, and then earlier it was like True Blood.
True Blood was.
And then it was Harry Potter, and then yesterday it was fucking William Shatner.
So,
and at the same time, like across from us, Olivia Munn is showing her tits or whatever it is she
has. Yeah, Seth Rogen's coming up.
Seth Rogen. And Michael Chiklis was over there.
Michael Chiklis was just over there.
Is happening in between our booth, and they won't let us back into our own booth.
Yeah, so to get in, I gotta flash the press thing, and
yeah.
I'm really loud.
Tell them.
I'm sorry.
To please. Let me through. I need to get to my own booth where I work. And this woman wasn't letting me through. So finally I was like, let me the fuck through. I'm pressed.
I'm pressed.
As if it was the 20s and that worked. But then once I yelled at her, she went to get a very large guy to help her out with me. And he realized that I was just trying to go to my own goddamn
She's
booth.
Trying to go home. She's
and escorted home, me man. There like a very like very gentlemanly. And I appreciated it.
I met one nice guy who I showed him my badge and he said, thank you, sir. That guy was very nice. Everyone else has given me shit every step of the way.
I just had to get the guy who did the booth's graphics in past the security to give our beg my way in to give someone who was bringing something to us that we needed for our booth. Terrible. But I don't want to get too jaded because it's all about stuff we like.
If I was here to see it, I would love this. But trying to work in this environment is very difficult.
I said I hated everything. I don't. It's fun.
Our interviews have a much lighter tone.
Yeah, like we have a table now. So that's last year we didn't even have that.
We're going to go into a couple of interviews. I'm going to go into one now, including something that like I really loved. I went over to Behemoth, asked if I could interview somebody. And it turned out to be Tom Fulp, like the creator of Newgrounds.
Wow.
And that was one of my favorite interviews. So let's get into that.
Which, by the way, just in case, Behemoth, famous for?
Castle Crashers. This is for a game I'm sure Tom will say by name.
Tom will tell us in his interview.
Big Block Battle. I saw so many games
Big
with
block
the word battle.
Battle
in it.
Battle.
It
battle.
Was formerly Game 3. Now we know what it is. All right, interview time.
What's up, guys? This is Chris from Comic-Con. We're at the Behemoth booth, and I'm here talking with Tom Fulp.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing? What are you guys? You're showing off today. It looks like you got Castle Crashers on PS3. And what is this new game? I'm baffled.
We're showing Battle Block Theater, which is Game 3. It's a multiplayer, platforming, party, cooperative, crazy game where you can do both linear cooperative levels or party mode, like arena levels, with different, versus modes.
It's ridiculously frantic from what I could see so far, right? Just now, with another Stranger, I was in a desperate attempt to grab souls and hold on to it.
Yeah, that was the soul snatch mode where you kill each other, steal each other's souls, and play keep away. So you just get points the longer you can keep their souls away from them.
How long has this been in development? Because you're one of the Newgrounds guys, so you do a lot of animation. Like, how long does this game like this take to pull off?
This has been going on for over a year and a half now.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just, we basically just work until we're done.
What's the final name on it, just so I'm clear?
Oh, Battle Block Theater.
Battle Block Theater. I remember there was a teaser trailer a long time ago.
Yeah.
I've been looking for clarification. What's one of your favorite modes so far?
I'm always a big fan of the gold grab mode, getting the gold from the whale and getting it over to the safe. Soul Steel, some favorite, maybe. Let me think about this. We have a newer one that's the King of the Hill, uh-huh. where it's like you fight to stay on the blocks. So sometimes a really good King of the Hill match is my favorite mode. In general, Soul Snatch tends to be my favorite, though, I think.
Yeah, it looks pretty interesting. What I was more curious, looking at it right next to Castle Crashers, what rating is Battle Block Theater going for?
It doesn't have a rating yet. It'll hopefully be E. It could potentially be T. It doesn't have blood, you know, but you do kill each other. I don't know where they'll...
I'm sort of looking for poop. I would like some poop. Like in the...
Yeah, no poop yet. We'll see.
Are you guys showing off anything new in Castle Crashers? I see a mode that I haven't played before.
We're showing the PS3 version of Castle Crashers. So, yeah, right now these guys are just fighting the volleyball boss.
Okay. I love the Castle Crashers. It's one of the most charming, well-animated things I've seen in a long time. Is there anything else you guys have in the pipeline?
Nothing yet. Yeah, just a lot of talk and ideas. So, we'll see.
When do you think Battle Block Theater is going to end up... is it Xbox Live exclusive?
Not exclusive. Right now it's the only confirmed one, though. Okay. And we don't have any set date right now.
That's awesome, man. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for talking with us, Tom.
Thanks. Thank you.
Boom, back from interview.
Man, I'm glad he told us the name of that game.
What is happening? Still live on the Comic-Con floor.
Yes. I got to say, when we're sitting here in front of this nonstop Warner Brothers reel, I really do want to play Brave and the Bold game.
Yeah.
It looks kind of cool.
It looks really cool.
What sucks about this Warner Brothers thing is that it's blocking people from getting in the booth to play anything.
Yeah, that's
Nobody can play anything.
That's also true.
Ooh, I saw one fight here earlier.
Really?
Yeah, security had to be called. That was pretty crazy.
Wow. What were they fighting over? Limited edition Galacti?
It was when the Vampire Diaries were being escorted in or out or something like that.
The diaries themselves?
I think so.
Wow.
Can I cosplay as a book?
Please, no.
Huge book that can't walk through aisles?
I refuse to clarify anything ambiguous about the Vampire fucking Diaries. You take that joke and you earned it. Okay. We will go into an interview that I'm really excited about. This is... We are talking with the guys from the Sly Cooper guys.
Yes.
It's not Sucker Punch, is it? But it's the guys.
No, it is not Sucker Punch, but there's another team working on that one.
They probably say in the interview.
They will totally tell us who it is.
I had notes, but I can't reach them right now.
Yeah, I can't. And my brain is frazzled from all the sensory
overload. So frazzled.
But you can see, you'll be able to tell very easily that Brett and I are very excited.
I am excited for Sly Collection. I will play through the first one again. Most of the second one, and probably still won't play the third one.
Maybe. Depends on the trophies.
Yeah.
HD. Wow, who are we sitting here talking to?
Hey, how's it going? My name is Kaylee Roberts. I am a producer for Studio 4 for SCEA.
And what game are you here at Comic-Con showcasing?
I am here showcasing the Sly Collection.
Woo!
Super pumped. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, I'm very happy to see this series in any form again.
Yeah, I have a nice place in my heart. I actually started as a QA lead on the Sly Collection, and that's what helped me get into the production side of things. So I definitely have a big, big spot in my heart for the Sly guys, especially the Murinator. I love the Murinator. Murray's my favorite.
I was a huge fan of the first two. Like I love the original, and I finished the second one, but I actually never got to the third one. Mainly because that 3D thing was kind of, I was like, I don't know, should I? But now that it's like, it's been long enough, and 1 and 2 were so close to each other, I didn't feel like I needed to play 3. But now that it's been so long, like, I really do feel like it's one, a cool value, but also, those are 3 great games. And now, it's this fall, isn't it?
It's actually November.
November,
yeah. It'll be November, yeah. So it's really exciting. I mean, one of the things that most people forget about the Sly series is that there was a lot of innovation in that title through Sucker Punch. You know, Sucker Punch obviously is working on Infamous right now, but right. We have Sanzaro is the company, a small dev team based out of Foster City. We're really excited with the way they're working with Sucker Punch and how they're remastering this game. It's just going to be really fantastic. We've taken it from a 4.3 to a 16.9.
Oh, cool.
We've totally up-resed the graphics, so letterbox right. plus all your HD graphics.
Right.
And like you said, most people don't remember, but Sly 3 was actually in HD. It was in 3D, and obviously it was the red-blue. You know, we'd work together with Sucker Punch, and they're like, oh, we're going to do the whole game in 3D, it's going to be great. And then we play with the glasses for like 10 minutes, and we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny that it took about 10 years to realize Sucker Punch's vision and really let the technology catch up with what they wanted to do in the first place. We got our first shot at seeing Sly on the new 3D HD television, and my God, we were like, now it's time to bring this back. It's time to do this. You know, we were really happy about the 3D push, and we felt that Sly was just the perfect collection to start with.
Right. And yeah, that's
and
a game
the trophies.
That, like,
oh, the trophies.
And yes, we will have trophies. Yeah. Absolutely, exactly. That's one of the things.
That's my thing with, like, there's a lot of PS2 games, Sly 1 specifically. I was like, I'm going to go back and play that.
Yeah.
But I want achievements and trophies, and I'm a baby now. And yeah. Like, but now, like, every time they put these old games out with trophies, it's like, oh, you got me.
I got it.
I'm back in.
Like. So, yeah, I mean, it's me too. You know, I definitely, Sly 1 was my favorite because there were some of the most amazing boss battles.
The bosses and just, like, I don't mind an opener and a more open world, but something about when it's so focused, like, I really liked. All the levels looked so different from each other, and they didn't have to worry about creating a whole world you could explore. It was like just this path you were on, and I really like that a
and
lot.
Nobody creates games that look like that nowadays unless they're based off of a license, and they don't, what's the word, try that hard. Yeah. And the Sly Cooper games, I don't know, they just set like a benchmark for platformers in general.
They absolutely did. One of the things that we really liked about them is that you know, Sucker Punch came up with a really great control scheme.
Yeah, it did.
In that you feel like you're doing a lot of complex moves, but it's very simple to pull them off, so you end up feeling like a master thief.
Yeah, like running across the lines and dangling from things. And really
always being able to perch up on top of stuff and look down, so you really felt like you were, like, tracking your target.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I can't remember, it was like a certain button, like just pushing circle would automatically make you land on anything pointy or dangly.
That's true.
Like,
that is absolutely true. Yeah,
something about that were very satisfying acrobatics without having to, like, really nail every single
hold
jump.
L1 plus square plus L2, press the D-pad twice. Yeah, it's.
Yeah.
I agree with you. That, and also, if you look at the original series, they're one of the first guys to start with the strafe lock, automatic strafe lock, where, you know, you could actually, as you got close to a target, it would lock on for you.
Oh, right.
And you'd move around the guy, and it was just so seamless and so awesome that most people just completely missed it.
I'd held out for a long time for it. Maybe they'll put them all on PSP, and this is obviously a much better solution.
I absolutely agree. Also about the trophies, where, you know, one of the cool things we like is it's a collection, so obviously we're giving you three games.
Right.
But we're also going to give you a platinum trophy per title.
Oh,
so
nice.
You're going to get three platinums for the entire collection.
Cool.
That's good. What about some new additions for that? Are you going to throw in some?
Well, obviously, you know, the code is 10 years old.
Right.
We have another developer doing the work, and we've been working closely with Sucker Punch, but even Sucker Punch is like, dude, this code's 10 years old. So what we decided to do was bring in some move support. You know, we wanted to get into the games, but obviously we couldn't do that. So what we're going to do is we're going to have some move mini games that sit outside the title.
Right.
And these are going to be really fun, family-friendly, you know, pick up and play, something you can play for, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes, have a great time with them, but also have some really, like, addictive scores. So you always want to try and beat your friends. You always want to be in there and trying to, you know, outdo the others.
Are those kind of a lead-in to that Heroes on the Move?
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like a similar.
I don't know if it'll be similar to the Heroes on the Move. I mean, I think, you know, Nihilistic is doing a great job with Heroes on the Move right now.
Right.
And I think it's going to be a completely different style of play for Heroes on the Move. And it's going to be awesome. I mean, we really enjoyed working with Nihilistic and on that title as well. But these move mini games, I think, you know, are going to be skinned towards more of a Sly, Sly-esque world. You know, we might not see, you know, the other characters, the heroes from the other one. You know, maybe more along the lines of some Bentley stuff or Murray.
Right.
And, you know, it'll be nice, fun, maybe very quick-paced, nothing too hard. You know, it's going to be kind of a plan pass. So you'll always need just one move, and you'll be able to play with, you know, your whole family.
I was going to suggest Knuckles. Just add Knuckles the Echinita in there. Boom, you have your fourth game. It's a Sega joke. No one even else is not laughing.
I'm not laughing.
You were the only audience for that fucking joke.
I got it.
Jesus.
I got it.
Fine.
Seems like no one likes Knuckles. That's
Knuckles.
That's the problem.
No one ever did.
No one knows what he is. An echinada?
Echidna.
Echidna?
Yeah. Let's go with that.
I still don't know what an echidna is.
Yeah,
so I guess
me either.
The answer is it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No one looked it up. But like the when you said minigames, it actually reminded me, like, I don't remember them so much in one, but and they may actually be in one, but two at least did a really good job of implementing minigames in there as main parts of the game.
You got some of the vector shooters where you had to hack in.
And a racing game with Bentley, I think, was driving a car around. And like
Murray had the van in the first one. Yeah, van in the first one.
But they never felt like, here comes another crap-ass minigame. It was like, no, there's a reason you're doing this, and it doesn't feel like push A to win.
It
was really cool.
Sucker Punch did a great job of taking this kind of stealth action-adventure game.
Yeah.
And adding in all these, like, little extra parts. I mean, one of the levels we're showing off today at Comic-Con is the biplanes. Sly 3, which you basically fly around, but I mean, you basically do a heist to get to this plane, fix this plane, get into the plane, and then you get to shoot down a bunch of fighters. And like you said, it's fun, it's fast paced, and it's a totally different genre than you would normally get to play as a platformer.
As all those, the big three PlayStation platformer, there was Jack, and then there was Ratchet, and then there was Sly. And I was always upset. Like, Sly never really got his fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh chances. And I was really sad to see him go. So this was it was a surprise for me to see it come up in
E3.
Yeah, it was. We're happy. We, you know, right now we're just working on the collection, trying to get that thing out as best we can. You know, we're really happy about what we're doing with these collections. I think by up-resing them and giving you guys trophies and stuff, it's a really great add value. You know, and especially for the younger kids who maybe haven't played. Well, obviously not God of War, but the Sly collection. You know, it allows them to kind of get back into some like you know what we felt were the nostalgic times back on the PS2. And now they get to play them on the PS3 with much better graphics. And the best part about it is it's still at the same price point that God of War was. So we're going to release all three titles with three platinums at $39.99.
Nice.
I'm really looking forward to it. What's the date on that?
It's going
to
be in November.
All right.
Right around November.
Thank you very much, man.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot, guys.
Ah, Sly Cooper. That brings back memories.
Man, he is rascally.
He is rascally. What interview should we go into next?
He is nature's
bandit. You know what I wanted to ask for real? Did everybody pick up a little trinket for themselves here?
I bought a Minish cap.
Yeah,
I was really miserable, and then I found that, and I've had several people. Oh, it's the Minish cap. Oh, it's the Minish cap.
Yeah, I know.
Minish cap, and then one guy, hey, Eslo, and then one girl took my picture.
Yeah,
even though it's for sale here and it's not unique, but that made me very happy.
Tyler, you haven't picked up anything yet, honey.
No, I just moved into your pricey ass chateau, and so I don't have any money to spend.
Look, I have the same problem. But I did buy a Gobo and a DuckTales animation cell with background.
Could be why you're broke.
Yes, this is why I'm Poe.
I did also buy Godzilla 1985 on DVD, which...
Oh, yeah, we watched quite a bit of that in the hotel
room. You see my sad fucking tweet last night? Just loving my Gobo plush doll, and I sat it up on my bed, and I tweeted that with a song by Gobo. You know what? I have an idea for closing. Let's keep moving. Let's keep moving. What interview should we do next?
I don't know. We did just, we talked about a very relevant game would be Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions.
Yes. I did bump into Dan Amrick. I bumped into him. He was, there's a mural for Shattered Dimensions, like on Island and J, or whatever the intersections are here. But there's some guy out there, like, painting a mural and, like, touching it up as the day goes on, and as the heat melts it off the canvas. But it's set up as a four-square stop, so you can check into the mural.
Dan is indeed the mayor of his own mural.
He is the mayor of a piece of...
A piece of art.
That won't be there in 2 days. But yeah, we talked to
somebody working on Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions.
Shattered Dimensions.
Let's get into that. Uh-oh, here's a big one we needed to do.
Yes.
What are we talking about, Elston?
We were talking about Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions.
And who do we have with us?
My name is Stefan Gravel. I'm a producer at Beenox, the developer that created Shattered Dimensions.
Shattered Dimensions. You weren't here for the trivia contest we did on the stage.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah.
The first question in our trivia contest was like, Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions has four separate Spider-Man universes. What are they? And a guy answered, and like three people went, how did you know that? Like, apparently, like they're on the floor. They didn't get the news of what the last universe was. What's the last universe in Spider-Man?
Okay, yeah, the last one, it's Ultimate Universe.
Ultimate.
With a twist, we went with a black suit. So you got symbiote Spidey.
What was the... Was it like a reasoning behind why... Because like in the Ultimate Universe, Spider-Man only really wore that black costume for a little bit. Was there... other than... was it just because like otherwise those universes look too similar?
A bit like because of that, but the main reason was that we wanted to make all four universes different, so different and unique, and so we were thinking about what would make Ultimate unique, so that's why we went with the symbiote, because with that we can do crazy stuff with the tendrils, with the tentacles, with the suit, basically, and we also, using the fact that adrenaline is boosting when you use the black suit, when he's got enough, he can unleash it, and that's what we call the rage mode. So when he unleashes it, he gets much more powerful, stronger as well, and you get to defeat your opponents much more easily.
What's it like working on, like, it's kind of the first major Spider-Man game in several years that's not Manhattan, a big open world. Like, what about the production of it, was different from your end? Like, okay, we don't have to worry about recreating Manhattan a fifth time, we can just focus on little things, or...
Well, what we wanted to do, basically, was to tailor the level for the villains. So we started by selecting the villains, and then we Talking with Marvel, we went and we decided, okay, which location would be cool for that villain. So that's why, for example, for Kraven, we went for the jungle. Because basically it's the world's greatest hunter, so he brings Spidey into its own turf. For the Ultimate Universe, there's Carnage, and there in Carnage, in the comic book, was taken prisoner by S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. So the game is that level is on Triskelion, and we learn right at the beginning of the level that S.H.I.E.L.D. was experimenting on Carnage, and they did crazy stuff to him, and now he's able to animate to drain the S.H.I.E.L.D. soldiers and animate their corpses in order to
like
make
a bunch of little clones of Carnage running around.
Exactly, he's able to create Carnage spawns out of goo. So that's cool.
What I'm excited about is the book I've been meaning to pick up, but have it, the noir. What villains fit in there? What villains are focused on a noir?
I know you guys picked Hammerhead, and that's a really good fit.
Hammerhead?
For that scenario.
Yeah, Hammerhead, and since it's a classic gangster, we went with a train yard, basically, a train yard, because he used it to smuggle stuff in New York. We also have Norman Osborn in there, the Goblin. His level is, I don't know if you read the comic book, but in the comic book is, prior to being a crime lord, he was a circus freak, so we made that level in a similar to a Coney Island amusement park, so you get to, you see a big wheel and a carousel and stuff like that, and for Comic-Con we revealed Vulture as well, and you got Vulture appeared in the first Spider-Man Noir comic book, so It's the same Vulture, and we use the fact that he's the one that in Spider-Man Noir that killed Peter Parker's father. So we're using that in the game as well. So that's why Spider-Man Noir wants to capture Vulture.
That's easily the universes that I've played so far in demos and stuff. The Noir one was the one that really felt the most different, and it looked obviously the most different with all the like contrasting black and white stuff, and like you couldn't just jump in as like everyone's used to playing a Spider-Man game at this point, but like that was the one where like you jump in and you start just punching people and trying to do combos and it doesn't work.
Yeah,
because I don't know much about the Noir universe because it's kind of the newest one, but like he doesn't have, I don't think, the super strength as much. Or
it's
Spider-Man, like pared down a little.
But we made it more. Well, let's say realistic. We're still talking about comic books, but it's much more realistic. So. Guns are harmful to Spidey, and he's not able to take down enemies as fast and as efficiently as the other Spidey can. So that's why, by sneaking behind them, he's able to take them down more efficiently. So that's why we went with stealth for Spidey Noir.
I thought it was really cool, the train yard level, like zipping. The zip line is like a one button push to certain target locations, and you can kind of like get away or sneak in really quick.
Exactly,
that was a cool touch.
Yep.
Oh, pardon me if this is a stupid question, but how exactly are all the... Is there a reason why all these universes are contained in one game? Is there an event? Is there something that's happened that's bridging them all together?
Yeah, it's right at the beginning of the game. We see in the opening cinematic, we are in a museum, and Mysterio is trying to steal a really, really powerful artifact called the Tablet of Order and Chaos. Mm-hmm. So Spidey gets to fight Mysterio, and during the fight... the tablets end up shattered and in multiple pieces, and those pieces end up in different universes. So that's why Spider-Man has to team up with other Spidey in order to get those pieces back.
Oh. And is there like a villain that's like, I am the overseer villain across
the big bad? Who's the big bad?
Because surely Mysterio is not the one. But that's not been revealed yet, I'm guessing.
I don't think so. Okay. I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay. But they did reveal the voice actors for Spider-Man.
Oh, that's right. I saw Neil Patrick Harris has made it in there.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Ultimate.
Yeah, he's doing. He's doing amazing.
Oh, yep. Amazing. Okay.
Amazing. Josh Keaton is doing Ultimate, and Josh Keaton just finished doing Spectacular Spider-Man. Not Spectacular. What's the name of his show? I don't remember.
Oh, I think the new cartoon is Spectacular.
It's okay.
I think so.
I got them all mixed up.
Yeah.
Right now.
Who's doing Noir?
Christopher Daniel Barnes.
Okay.
That voiced in the 90s. And
really wanted to hear Rorschach from Watchmen doing
Spidey Noir. Christopher Daniel Barnes did an awesome job with Spidey Noir. I really, I'm not sure I should say it, but it is my favorite in the game. He did a really cool job. But they really all four were really good, because we also have Dan Gilvezen for Spidey 2099, mm-hmm. and he voiced Spidey in Spider-Man is Amazing Friends in the 70s.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
So all four voiced Spidey in the past, so they knew the character. They knew how to do their job, basically, and they ended up doing a really, really cool job.
Cool. That's
amazing.
And the demo that I took... said it was. I played the 360 build, but I mean, obviously, 360 PS3 are the same. But also, yep. I was told that the Wii version, in a rare case, is not like it is the same game. It's not like another version of the game with different missions. It's like the entirely same
it's
game.
It's exactly the same game,
right? Mm. With like a couple. I know there was a scene where like Noir is tearing some cages off of a wall, and like there it's mashing on a button. But in the Wii, when you like point the remote and pull some stuff off, but otherwise, like the levels, the content is the
same content, same levels, same boss fight, same everything.
Cool.
Yeah, the same thing.
All right, well, that's great. When's it coming out? Probably this fall, right?
September 7th.
September 7th. Yep. Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks.
I'm guessing I'm more excited about that game than I actually thought. The Spider-Man Alternate Universe Eye seems kind of neat.
Yeah, I really do think the Ultimate one is kind of the most basic, like, gameplay-wise. It's it's combo, rage meter, combo.
But it's that there is another option. And maybe
it's a piece of a game instead of an entire game that's just a beat-em-up.
Like maybe they'll eventually... I don't know what they're saying, how they're going to... Will they ever mesh together, like, as you complete the game?
I have a feeling the final battle will be, like, you have to play each of them a little bit against the same final boss. That's my guess.
That would make sense.
I think the game will still be... It'll be good.
Tyler, what was the most exciting interview for you that we did this week?
For me, probably Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim?
Yeah.
You know what? We have
I haven't gotten to play it yet.
Oh, you should. You should go play it.
Wait, we have that interview we did?
Yes!
Oh, no kidding!
Hold on, let me queue it up.
All right.
You want to put Northern Idaho? Wait, who do you work for?
I work for Ubisoft as a Fragdoll.
As a Fragdoll.
Yeah.
Okay.
We live all over the place.
So the Fragdolls aren't based anywhere.
No, we're all over the place. We're just a team of pro-girl gamers and Ubisoft's marketing team.
Do you want to leave this on the air or what?
Sure. Yeah.
See? Who are we talking to? We're talking to a Fragdoll. Sarah.
I'm Sarah. I'm GlitchFD, the new Fragdoll for the Fragdoll team from Ubisoft.
And she's currently the resident expert of one of the coolest games on the show floor, in my opinion, which is...
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World. When I asked on Twitter what games you wanted to see, and an overwhelming majority said Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And I looked at it, and I was just telling you the comic is sort of me at that age, 22. I'm still playing my old Genesis and Nintendo games. But the game itself is everything I thought games would be. Because people are calling it 8 and 16-bit, but it's a little better than that. It's a little more fluid. And the music is exactly how I thought all music would sound. Anna Monoguchi, who also do our show's theme song, and great band.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't say enough nice things about Scott Pilgrim.
Right. There's so much good to say. I mean, everybody likes the 8-bit finish, of course. Like, but we realize that it's a little smoother looking behind that.
Yeah.
But it gives us that nostalgia of the 8-bit retro era.
Like, well, the arcade game, when you were obsessed with a certain property and they brought out an arcade game you could only play there and be graphics you couldn't have at home, like it... For me, it recreated the exact same feeling of that. Like the old Simpsons arcade game, the Ninja Turtles game comes to mind.
Yeah.
Like, it looks just like, at the time, you couldn't get, it didn't look just like the cartoon anywhere but the arcades, and I love that this represents that so much.
Right, and whenever they try to remake those games now, they don't have any of that charm that they used to have, and this feels like it's bringing back that charm, except it's new material.
Yeah,
it's Scott Pilgrim.
And what level are you showing off today?
We're showing off level 3, where you fight Todd Ingram at the end.
Todd Ingram.
Yeah.
And who did I? I'm trying to remember the girl's name. She
Envy.
Is it Envy?
Envy Adams.
Yes, and her cohort that looks like Marcy from the Peanuts.
Yes, yes.
And she her move is to like grow a tentacle arm and reach it underground.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, just it's a bunch of insanity.
Kind of looks like Octopus's arm from Spider-Man.
Yeah, and that's. That's one of the things I liked about it is because it is Scott Pilgrim is a meager man. When he collects money, it's by the dime.
Yeah.
He does damage by the twos and fours. I'm sure he goes up from there.
It's a lot better than those games that just rack up millions of untangible dollars instead. It's actually, you know, $20.
Well, it's what comparable. The unemployed Scott Pilgrim would make.
Right.
If he were going through his own game. That's what it's so true to the comics.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite character?
So far, I'm digging Ramona, but I guess that's predictable, but she's pretty cool.
What's her weapon?
She's been using a mallet, and it's pretty sick. She just smashes people, and in the game, you can also pick each other up, so that's also another one of my favorite weapons, just using my partner, picking him up and tossing him across the screen.
And who are the selectable characters thus far?
Kim, Stills, Scott himself, and Ramona.
And Ramona, and I saw I was embarrassed to say it in front of you, Knives, because I had never said the word out loud, and I didn't know if that's how it was pronounced.
Yeah, Knives.
Knives comes out as an assist.
Right.
It blows like a giant kiss, makes everything explode.
Actually, she seems to do a different move for, I haven't seen all of them yet, but she seems to do a different move for each person. She does a kiss for Kim, and for Ramona, she does a caffeine boost with a teapot and stuff, so she's one of the great assists in the game to help your character out and get him through the level.
So there are numerous assists?
Yes. You also have R1, and that does each character's assist, and you unlock combos as you go throughout the game. There's also, as you're collecting money, there's shops. Like, go back, and for example, the Todd Ingram level is a concert hall, and it's a little concert shop. So you buy their potato chips, water, or a wristband, a hipster cap, or a concert t-shirt, and those things up your stats as old games would, like defense plus two.
It's so very exciting for me because I'm excited about the movie, but I'm almost more excited about the game.
I'd say the same for myself.
Yeah, there's never been a property so well suited to an Xbox Live game, and this does come to Xbox Live. You just announced it.
Yes, we did just announce it. It's also coming to Xbox Live on the 25th, and the PlayStation Network, of course, on August 10th.
Is that around the movie? The time the movie's released?
Yes, I think the movie's the 13th.
Yeah. Okay. And it doesn't. And just to clarify, it has nothing to do with Bart versus the World because I really fucking hate that game.
I don't believe there's any connection
thank
there
God.
Now.
Thank God. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Of course.
Thanks, Sarah. See, I told you we had the interview.
You
Scott
were right.
Pilgrim.
You were right. I didn't believe you.
And with a frag doll, no less.
No less.
And. But anything else? Tyler, you and I did go and get one really yummy interview.
I think this is the most exciting for you.
Yeah. Yeah, if we can ever turn a video around, we're having a hard time doing pretty much anything.
Yeah. We'll get it around. We did two interviews, actually, for Tron Evolution.
Tron Evolution.
And Tron Evolution
Battle Grids.
Battle Grids, which is the Wii game, which actually I kind of like more for a reason you'll find out about in the interview.
Isn't that weird? Hopefully we actually get him to say it out loud.
Yeah, I think we did.
All right. Here's Tron.
All right, we're here talking with Nick Christiani, level designer of Tron Evolution for Propaganda Studios. And I just wanted to ask you, this doesn't take place, Tron Evolution doesn't take place during the events of Tron Legacy, the movie.
No, they don't. Our game is a bit of a prologue to Tron Legacy, the movie. We've worked with the script writers. We've worked with movie set props. We've worked with movie set assets to create a world that bridges right to the movie. The end of our game will fit right into what comes into Legacy.
So we're looking at a prequel. Are we going to see any familiar characters from either movie?
Yeah, you're going to see some familiar characters. Tron's back. Korra's playing a big role in our movie, or our game. Sorry. The user might be in there somewhere. We're also introducing a few new characters in our world and a few new things, like a few new environments and outland areas that you may not have seen in Tron before.
Now, I saw the new trailer that came out this week. At the very end, it's hinted at not just a light cycle, but a light plane, a light flight vessel of some sort.
Come on. It is in there. I can't really talk too much about that for you. I'm talking about the game. But there's a hint of something that's in there that is pretty cool, pretty awesome. And I can't wait to see the full thing myself.
All right, I can't wait either. Thanks for talking to us, Nick.
Thank you. Prepare to transport to Light Cycle
Grid. We have transport. We're here talking to Jamie Toghill, lead designer of the exclusive Wii version, Tron Evolution Battle Grids. So this one's a little more multiplayer focused?
Yep, every game. So we basically got 15 different great games in the experience. And everything you do allows up to four players to play in a multiplayer experience. It's all local multiplayer. It's all about being on your couch at home, trash-talking your friends. As you can see on the screen behind us, everything that you do in the game is tracked. So if you and I play for like few weeks, and then we switch the game off and we come back to it a week later, it remembers everything we've done. So if you don't want to play against me because you know I'm better than you, and you come back and say, hey, I'm still better than you because my stats don't show it, and it creates those talking points. And that's what we wanted to do with our local multiplayer experience, and that's why we didn't focus so much on the online experience, is because we want to create those moments where you and I are trash talking each other, we're getting in there, we want to play one more match, just one more match, and keep doing that. So that's where we've really built the experience around, getting the families and friends to play together.
And you guys also expand on the Tron universe a little bit by adding some new characters exclusive to this game. And unlike the other one, you got 90-degree light cycle turns.
So this is cool. So we're actually set in a utopian period of the Tron universe. So the original movie, 1982, and then we got Tron Legacy, 2010. We're set in 1988. So it's kind of a utopian period. Everyone's living in this kind of like bubble of harmony right now. What you see in the next-gen game, it gets a little bit darker, a little bit more dystopian. Things start to break down. In our universe, everyone's living in perfect harmony, apart from a couple of programs that are basically, they want to win the Game Grids Championship. And the Game Grids Championship is the Olympic Games of the Tron universe. And so these are the guys that are going to be causing some problems for you as a player in our story mode. You'll get to see them. They're unique to the Wii. So their names are Blaze and Bosch. And they're our bad guys. And then we also have like Quora, who's a character, as you know, from Tron Legacy. And then we also have like characters from the original movie, Tron and Kevin Flynn. So we've been able to bring those characters together. It's not just characters as well. We have exclusive environments, locations that are actually part of the Tron canon. So we worked very carefully with the movie guys. They actually helped us write the script and pretty much wrote the script for us for the story to make sure that it fitted into the longer timeline for Tron. So while you might not see some of these characters in the movie, you might not see them in the other games, they are part of the Tron canon, which is very, very cool.
And we're looking at a holiday 2010 release window along with the movie?
Absolutely, exactly that. Holiday 2010 was when this game's coming out. Exclusive for the Wii.
All right, thanks a lot, Jamie.
That was great. Thank you very much. Watch it, watch it.
Ah! How can you not have right turns? Were you ready?
Yeah.
How can you not have 90-degree turns in a Tron game?
What the hell? They did it in Tron 2.0.
There aren't 90-degree turns?
There aren't in the main game, but it's in the PS 360 game. But the Wii game is sort of like a little Tron Olympics kind of deal.
I was going to say, I saw the because we went there later, and I just got to see the Tron experience, which was probably the coolest thing I saw as well.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The Daft Punk music playing, the colors and all that. Oh God,
fantastic.
It was like being in the future.
You go. Just walk through the door. It's Flynn's Arcade, and there's a bunch of old arcade machines there set not on free play. You had to use those tokens, which I was not going to ever part with, so I didn't get to play any Joust, which that's my game.
Joust.
But then you walk through a door, and then you walk into a light, and you hear Jeff Bridges talk, and a laser shoots, and then boom, you're on like the fucking, like the Enterprise, on the deck of the Enterprise. On acid. I hate to say on acid.
On acid?
On
Chris,
acid.
That's illegal.
I'm sorry.
Don't
but it's like
that.
Just full of strobe lights, and they're showing the trailer with its booming bass, and all these lights are tuned to the trailer. I don't know. It's
super
pretty
cool.
Pretty extravagant. I loved it.
Yep.
But Tyler, you and I did an interview, did we not?
We did.
Yes, on mic together.
We did. Was it for an MMO?
It might have been.
Uh-oh.
Are we ready to do this? Are you going to be able to say the name this time?
Well, the name is Vindictus.
Tyler.
It is a Nexon MMO.
That is true.
That neither of us really knew anything about, but that's good. We went in, as you guys who may not have read about it, or you probably know 10 times more than us, but...
And that's what we do as professionals.
As we don't do research. We just find out.
I look on all the box backs I find.
Yes.
we've established this.
It's established.
So without further abobo, here is the Vindictus interview.
Perfect.
I'm alive.
That's saying something at these things.
Yeah, I don't feel alive.
How are you feeling? Who are we talking with right now?
I'm Chris Geislink. I'm an assistant producer on Vindictus. At Nexon.
Vindictus, which I haven't had a chance to play, but like the buzz coming off it at E3, it was sort of like it was getting the sleeper award a lot. The one everybody expected to be, Gears of War 3, yeah, that's good. But then Vindictus was the thing that people hadn't seen yet. And seen it, I don't know. There was quite a buzz about it.
Yeah, people have been really excited about it. We're really happy with the buzz we've been getting at E3 and here at Comic-Con. You know, we're an MMO, but we're very action-oriented. You know, there's no auto attacks or, like, just pointing and clicking and waiting for an enemy to die. Everything that you're doing on the screen is very, you know, real-time action. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to change the way people look at combat in MMOs. And on top of it, it's free to play, and I think it's really changing the way people look at free to play. I mean, it's the buzz term we like to use is brutal elegance, because the combat brutal is absolutely elegance. Brutal, but then the graphics are like very elegant and beautiful.
I just looking at it on the floor, the characters themselves seem to have a little more interaction with their environment. They're not just most MMOs that things kind of hover around, but this really feels like when they walk through a hallway, they're taking that step. You can see that step. They're turning. They're reacting on. Like in real time?
Absolutely. Well, so we used a modified version of the Source engine from Valve. We actually have a very good relationship with Valve. That's been going for a long time. And so we modified the Source engine. And if you're familiar with the Source engine, you know it's like got really great physics. And it's a really great engine because it's also not much of a system hog. So like you can have relatively low requirements and still have a game that looks really good. So we've got awesome physics. Like, the entire environment is actually destructible. Mm-hmm. Like, if you hit a pillar, the whole pillar will come crashing down.
Oh, wow.
And then anything you see laying on the ground in the dungeons, you can actually pick up and use as a weapon if you want. Like, you can actually pick up melons and smash guys in the face with them.
That reminds me of an old-school beat-em-up.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a little bit of that feel, but with modern, you know, tech on the graphics and stuff.
Yeah, I love to see Nexon kind of mixing things up. I've played some other new MMOs that were sort of on preview, and I feel like I keep seeing the same MMO conventions, and it just looks like World of Warcraft. And then I see what, you know, Nexon's bringing, and, you know, it seems like you guys are finding new ways to do the MMO, and, I mean, not only new pay structures, the free-to-play more often than not, but just, you know, like you talked about the combat. Are there any more details on how that works, real-time combat?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very combo-based, so, you know, you may... Like one of the most basic combos is, like, if you do, say, three light attacks followed by a chain together and then follow a heavy attack, you're going to have a combo. And then, of course, we have skills that you can train as you're going through the game and learn new moves and new skills, which gives it a lot of customization. I mean, the game is extremely customizable. We have characters that you play as, but really it's more like classes, but we treat them like characters for the purpose of the story. But you can customize everything from, you know, their facial features, their hair, their skin color, eye color. One thing I think is really cool is you can custom, like, when you select their height, if they're taller, they tend to have stronger attacks, whereas if they're shorter, they tend to be faster. So, you know, it actually affects your stat. Your height actually affects your stats.
Okay, so it's not just being a woman makes you magic.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And also, you know, we kind of go against some of the stereotypes. Like, one of our female characters is actually stronger than our male character.
Oh, look at that. First time I can recall, and God knows when.
Yeah, I mean, usually it's the female. They make her fast, but kind of weak. Our female is, like, closer to our tank than our male is.
Does she have a name?
Her name is Fiona.
Fiona. Like this, a warrior woman.
So what's the setup for the story?
So it's loosely based on Celtic mythology.
Ooh.
Basically, there's a goddess called Morrigan who promises the humans that if they defeat the Fomors, which are basically the monsters, if the humans defeat the Fomors, Morrigan will take them to like a promised land called Arryn. And that's just the basic background. But of course, as you're playing through, there's lots of twists and turns, and there's lots of backstory, and a lot of the NPCs have things going on in their past that you have to discover. So of course, you know, the story unfolds as you go, and there's a lot to it, and lots, and of course, we're not revealing too much about that.
I see.
But that is the basic backdrop, is based on Celtic mythology.
Have you discussed yet any of the transactions that'll be in the game?
We have not, but I can tell you, just like all of our games, like it's free to play. We do have microtransactions, but they're going to be mostly cosmetic items.
Like Dungeon Fighter, like weapons and clothing.
Yeah, very similar. I mean, mostly like cosmetic items and a few items of convenience, like maybe a health potion or something. But nothing game breaking. You know, we want to make it so that any player, whether they pay money or not, is able to experience all the content, you know, from beginning to end. You know, you don't have to pay to. In other words, you don't have a huge advantage if you pay. Like, that's not like you're gonna win the game by paying. We want you to still go through and have fun and play through it.
Yeah, this isn't an EA game. You can't win just by paying.
So it's an MMO, but you kind of make it sound like there's some kind of end game. Is there some kind of story arc that you can follow?
We're working up. Yeah, I mean, we're working up to that, and we plan on doing a lot of content updates and adding to the story, probably monthly or so. I mean,
okay,
maybe 4 to 6 weeks with new content.
I really like that release that release schedule. I only see Nexon doing it, but like the updating the story every so often.
Yeah, I mean, we like to keep something to mm-hmm. you know, make players want to keep coming back and playing and learning more and experiencing new stuff. And then, you know, as with every episode in the story, we have completely new background, you know, mm-hmm. completely new environments and things and new monsters, and so it feels really fresh, you know.
Yeah. Are you in beta or?
Our closed beta begins on August 10th.
Uh-oh, hear that?
And we've taken all the applications, but we will be doing a few beta key giveaways probably Uh-oh. Through our Facebook page.
Oh, I hope we get some.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Uh-oh.
We'll see. I don't know.
Uh-oh. And what release are you looking at? Full-on release?
It'll be this year. We haven't announced the date
sure.
yet, though. But we're looking at probably a fourth quarter of this year.
All right, guys. Vindictus. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. And have a good Comic-Con.
Oh, we're trying.
Thank you. Stay hydrated.
Tyler, that was fantastic.
I know.
You were great on mic there.
Oh, was I?
You were so great, I don't have the heart to tell you.
Oh.
That I did an interview without you.
Oh, yeah?
That I recorded on my iPhone.
No.
I'm sorry. I was on the fly. You were editing video.
Oh, no.
I got an interview with the Medal of Honor people.
You did?
I'm sorry. Yes, and I think we discussed it there. First of all, the interview does open up with some guy screaming at his kid, "You motherfucking asshole, come away from me, I'll fucking kick your ass."
Hey.
Hi, I'm 8. I mean, I'll fucking kill you, kid.
What?
Man, what the fuck? And like, yeah, we're both baffled by it. So yes, I do come into the interview saying we're watching a guy call his kid a fucking asshole. I'd never seen anything like it.
My goodness.
Yes, Medal of Honor.
Brought to you by Medal of Honor.
Brought to you by abuse.
Okay, so we're watching a kid be called a fucking asshole by his father, and I'm also here at the Medal of Honor booth, and who are we here talking with?
My name's Kevin O'Leary, and I'm the product manager for Moat.
For Moat? I love that. I think Brett
That's
said
inside lingo right
Brett
there.
Said he really wanted to come up with a headline for the beta, Moat Beta Blues.
We just made a bunch of gamer tags here. We got some good ones. We did Motastrophe,
yeah, I like it.
Mopra,
I like it.
Mobilize, and I don't remember the last one. So we got a couple good ones.
Mo Money. Mo Howard, no, that's too old.
Yeah.
I just got my hands on with it on a keyboard and mouse, which was kind of phenomenal because I've been a console gamer for so long, I forgot playing Medal of Honor on a keyboard and mouse. It was
totally.
I jumped right back into sniping immediately.
Nice. So, yeah, PC's always a great audience to have out there, especially in the shooter landscape. Mm-hmm. Lots of hardcore guys and the gals out there probably already playing the beta.
Are you primarily showing off multiplayer today?
Yeah, it's all multiplayer. It's the beta that's currently live. It's what you're seeing behind us on Xbox and PC.
Yeah, I was really impressed. So, like, I did want to, like, because I'm just sort of getting back into shooters
okay.
with the next generation. I wanted to, what, like, distinguishes this from Modern Warfare?
I mean, the biggest thing is the authenticity. So, Medal of Honor as a franchise has always been about telling an authentic story and, like, telling the soldier's story. But it's always been in World War II settings.
Yeah.
So, this time, the big reboot that we're doing, we're bringing it to the modern era. But we're keeping that authentic angle, you know, that the franchise is known for. And this time, what that means is that we have an exclusive access to what's called Tier 1 Operators. These guys, you can see the image behind me here, our key art character. His name's Dusty. This guy is pretty much one of the most badass guys in the world. He's like a legend inside these guys. Give you a little background. There are about 2 million servicemen and women in the U.S. Armed Forces. And of that, there's 50,000 special ops. Those guys are like SEALs and Rangers and stuff like that. Like pretty badass kind of groups. And then in that, handpicked are a few hundred Tier 1 operators.
Okay.
So these guys are just the absolute tip of the spear, elite of the elite.
And I'm trying not to say something that could be construed as racist, but I saw turbans and AK-47s. So where exactly is this skirmish taking place?
So the background of the game itself is taking place in Afghanistan.
I knew it! Yes!
Of course. I mean, the locations are real. If you saw the maps, Kabul City Ruins and Helmand Valley, they're real locations. So the game is like partly based on what we've learned from these Tier 1 guys. They come in and consult with us, and that's where their story is to be told. You know, it's like, we didn't really choose it, it chose us. Like, we wanted to tell the story of these guys, and this is where their stories have happened.
Yeah, it's really smooth. I noticed compared with other shooters, the battlefields are a little more open.
Mm-hmm.
I had a great time with that because I did action sniping.
Okay.
It's running, scope, zoom, and still pulling off a couple nice headshots.
Yep. Yeah, and Medal of Honor is a little bit more tight-knit. You'll find some of the maps, especially Kabul City. It's very tight. It's one of our game modes called Team Assault. And so that is much more, it's like a deathmatch style kind of gameplay. And the other one, I don't know which one you played, it's called Helmand Valley. And that's combat mission. And that's a little bit more open. There's a few more paths you can take to complete your objectives.
All right, well, I'm really looking forward to it now. What's the date? What's the date on?
We've got a couple good things coming out. So we just actually recently announced our limited edition. Uh-huh. So if you pre-order, you're guaranteed a copy, and it's no extra cost. So it's basically no fee to upgrade. And in there, we've got a couple of bonuses, an exclusive weapon for multiplayer, which is the MP7, which actually you can test in the beta, get a little hands-on with it ahead of time, and then early access to a pair of shotguns as well. So you get a little bit of a day one head start if you pre-order.
Is there anything to sort of stave off used sales? If people buy it used, will they still have access to the multiplayer?
We're actually not talking about anything now on that. We do have a program, a larger program to all of EA. We've already announced for the sports division called Online Pass.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. When's the game coming out again exactly?
It's October 12th, 2010 for PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and, of course, our favorite PC.
And the DS, no?
And the DS. I don't know how Medal of Honor would work on the disc. Yeah. 3DS Medal of Honor would be pretty sweet.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for talking to us.
Cheers.
Mo.
Yes,
Mo. Mo problems, less money.
Yeah, I tweeted that, the Mo Beta Blues.
I may have said that in the interview.
I can't believe nobody made that joke yet.
May have said that. And that was actually the first time I played a shooter with a mouse and keyboard online.
Oh, shit.
In a long time, and I fucking loved it, and I wanted to go back and do it again.
Yeah,
it is I don't feel like I'm bothering to be competitive with two sticks anymore.
Yeah,
but I can do it with a mouse and keyboard. What other interviews did we have? I tell you what. Too much games for you? Oh. Comic-Con? Let's take a break. We're going to talk about something non-game-related. How about a little... Brett, guess.
Guess what we talked about.
That's right. Google TV. We have an interview with Google TV.
What a good guess.
Here we go.
I'm so glad I transmitted that to you with my brain.
Here we go. Get ready, gentlemen. All right, we're going to take a break from video games for a second. And who are we talking to right now?
Slaudine Choder from Google.
From Google. And Jesus, what are we showing on the floor here today? Google TV. You had people lined up trying to see what was going on. And G4 making a lot of noise. But, what is Google TV about? I'm not even sure if I understand what it is yet.
Sure. So Google TV is actually an operating system for television devices. So what we've realized over the past few years is that there's all this incredible content coming to the internet from places like YouTube and all your favorite websites, and there's no easy way to get to that internet video and internet content on your television. So Google, building off our Android platform, which I'm sure you're familiar with on our phones, we thought it would be really exciting if we bring the same innovation that's come to phones with the internet and applications to the television. So Google TV is an open source operating system that's going to work on a variety of television devices. In particular, we're going to ship a TV this fall with Sony. We're also shipping what we call a buddy box or a companion box with Logitech. They'll let you upgrade your existing TV to be this internet-capable TV that can view applications from that run on Android and websites.
So we're looking at a box situation.
Well, both a box and actually a television itself. We're actually We're building Google TV into the actual television, which we're really excited about, actually.
Yeah, because I've seen a couple televisions come with like the occasional app, or it looks like an app. It'll look like a YouTube or Netflix, but it doesn't do everything or search everything.
Yeah, that's actually one of the biggest distinctions of Google TV from other types of operating systems or platforms available for television today. Google TV brings a full internet to your TV with Google Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
And with Flash support, we can render pretty much any site on the internet. So we're really excited about
that. You hear that, Apple? Flash support. Look out. Tyler, what about for your phones? Will this be phone accessible?
So Google TV, actually, we are building applications that will allow you to control the experience from your Android or iPhone. So you can, say, speak into your phone, SportsCenter, and it will navigate to SportsCenter.
Navigate to SportsCenter. So is this like part of the channel or something they would have on like ESPN.com?
So that's another exciting thing about Google TV. Google TV actually integrates with your traditional cable or satellite experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have cable or satellite television from someone like Dish Network, we actually integrate with that experience. So you can type ESPN, go to ESPN the channel, but also go to ESPN.com or CNN.com. Websites, all like the same interface.
I like my on-demand. I like the idea of on-demand, but the UI and like getting to place is horrendous right now on our current set-top boxes. So, yeah, it's becoming a little more clear.
Yeah, so I think one of the big innovations that Google TV is bringing to television is we're doing everything through a search-driven interface.
Yeah.
So whatever you want, you just type it, and we'll find it for you across the web or television.
And my biggest question, what about the Hulus?
So technically, we support Hulu.
Yeah.
We support Flash and all the internet technology that Hulu leverages.
Mm-hmm.
So Hulu will technically work on Google TV. It's up to them if they want to make it work on when the product actually releases.
Okay, yeah, because I saw they had a subscription service coming for television specifically, and they blocked game consoles from showing Hulu stuff. So I was wondering if they were playing ball, it'd be compatible. But I guess if it's just only bound by your internet connection, then what's the difference, right?
It's really, I mean we're supporting every internet website, and it's really up to the content owner if they want to allow Google TV to access it.
All right, don't forget GamesRadar.com. That's very important.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot for shedding some light on Google TV.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Oh my goodness, I'm trying to remember what else we have. This is too. Was that us coming back in?
Yes, you're too late. Gotta
okay.
go back.
Okay. What else did we do? No. That's
more
playing out the Looney Tunes backwards, which I guess means we're back. No. Stop it.
Okay.
Stop.
I can rewind time every time.
And what was the other interview Eric did? Oh my, what was
for
it?
For the Namco Bandai game, Enslaved.
Enslaved. That sounds offensive.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about it up until E3, and then I got to take a demo of it, and it actually is really cool. It's from the Ninja Theory,
mm-hmm.
the Heavenly Sword.
Yeah,
people.
Love the Heavenly Sword.
So the game looks fantastic. It's really gorgeous because it's like in a post-apocalyptic world that isn't brown.
Mm-hmm.
There's still grass. Like, if the world is ruined, it's been regrown,
mm-hmm.
and it looks really nice. And the dynamic between Monkey and the girl, I forgot what her name is.
Monkey Girl?
No, Monkey's the dude who's the big guy, and then the girl. But the back and forth, like their abilities play off of each other. I hope it's really cool.
Oh, let's do this.
Let's go.
Greetings, Internet. I am Eric from Games Radar, and this is Lily Basma. Lily is the brand manager on Namco Bandai's new game, Enslaved Odyssey to the West. And we're here to talk about the game, learn a little bit about it. I think it's going to be a sleeper hit, and the only way I'm going to be wrong about that is if it's a bona fide, legitimate, full-blown hit. So Lily, tell us a little bit about Enslaved. It's actually based on an old Chinese story, a very well-known.
Very old, old story called Journey to the West. It's more than 400 years old, so there's been a lot of different products that have come out. It's very loosely based, so I'll keep that said, so people don't...
So the 400-year-old Chinese story wasn't based in post-apocalyptic New York that had been turned into a jungle and overrun by robots?
Not quite.
Well, that's a good distinction to make. But,
yes,
okay.
We have some of our main characters and some of the attributes that they have, but it's very loosely based, like I mentioned.
Okay, so the very main character's name is Monkey.
Correct.
And... This is obviously, it's like a third-person combat adventure kind of game.
A very action-adventure, so it's not a full-on, combat game. It has exploration, it's got puzzle-solving, there's a lot of different elements for this game.
And Monkey himself, we've been watching it, I played it. Monkey has a really sort of acrobatic, almost circus-like combat style. Tell us about that.
Well, with Monkey, what we wanted to do, he's a loner. He's survived on his own. He's had to adapt. There aren't a lot of humans around. So as you can tell from his physique, he's had to survive on his own, beat up a lot of guys, kill a lot of things in order to survive.
He seems like
he's a very brawny guy, but very flexible. He said, survival comes in every kind of different ways of hiding, doing things, probably climbing up trees. So yeah,
he looks and moves like he was raised by gorillas. He's kind of a savage Tarzan kind of guy.
Yes, he's not your average Joe. You don't run into them in the street. He's a little heavy on top. His legs are nice and narrow. He gets to move really, really quickly.
Well, tell us about Monkey's combat style, because his character design obviously sort of informs that, but the way he puts his combos together and all that sort of thing.
Well, Monkey has multiple different abilities. One is his combat staff, melee with a staff. So that's very acrobatic. He does link some of his combos together, flipping over the shoulder, all that stuff. But he also has ranged attack, which is really cool. It's something that you unlock as you're going through the game. His staff becomes a ranged weapon, which gives you a different kind of gameplay mechanic. So you're not always bashing through with your fists and your staff. You're actually taking enemies out very strategically using some of the ranged weapons that we have. Oh, well, one weapon, multiple ammo.
Okay, and he's actually played by...
He's actually played by Andy Serkis. Andy Serkis is not only his voice, but also all his motion capture. We did something called performance capture, where they actually do all the VO and all of the capture of the body all at once. So the characters get into acting mode, and they play out all the scenes in one room, which makes it really exciting because they kind of get into their characters. Andy Serkis also helped co-direct all of the sequences that are happening in the game.
So Andy Serkis is actually doing the voice as well.
Yes.
For those of you who might not know, Andy Serkis played Gollum.
On Lord of the Rings.
On Lord of the Rings.
He was also King Kong.
There you go. And he also played a role in the developer's previous game, Heavenly Sword.
He did. He helped them with that. They've got a really good relationship with him.
Okay, now tell us, that's one character, Monkey. Yes. Tell us about the second character.
The second character is by the name of Trip. She's a 19-year-old girl who is very tech-savvy. She grew up in a very tight-knit community, and unfortunately she got captured by one of the slave ships. We are not quite sure how or why, but in her capture, she ends up, you know, crashing the system, meeting Monkey, and in turn enslaves Monkey to try to get him to take her home, and that's where our journey begins. But she's really, really smart. She is, unlike Monkey, she's not very brawny. She is delicate. She can't defend herself with her hands, but what she can bring to the table is a lot of the technology that she brings in. She is the one who helps Monkey upgrade his staff. So we have a lot of these items called tech orbs that you collect throughout the game. And in doing so, she's able to take his staff or his other abilities and enhance them.
And they have sort of an uneasy truce, don't they? She's not an evil character, but she put the magic headband on him and now he can't get away.
Correct. In the beginning, it's a very much a love-hate relationship. He hates her. He wants to kill her every chance he gets, but...
She would love to survive, so
correct.
There you go.
In killing her, he would kill himself because her vitals are tied to that headband, so if she dies, he dies. So he has no choice but to help her out.
So in the level I played, it was pretty early on in the game, but there seems to be sort of not a co-op, but there's a sort of a two-character dynamic where lots of times she'll be in one place and you've got to take out some enemies so she can cross, or she'll be somewhere to hit a switch for you, that sort of cooperative thing.
There's a lot of cooperative gameplay here. Although you're only playing as Monkey, you do work very well together. She can be an asset. She's not always somebody that you need to get through in certain locations. She's able to distract for you. She's able to upgrade your weapons for you. She also has the ability of scanning enemies. So if you've killed an enemy once, she gets to scan it, and the next time you run into that enemy, she gives you... tips on how to take them down, all their weak points, and also how to use their machinery against them. We have some of our scouts are called Gunner Scouts, and she helps Monkey understand that he can actually use their machine guns for himself. So she, every time you come against an enemy, you take it down, she scans, next time you come in, she says, here, do this, this is going to help you. So eventually, he's going to rely on her.
Okay, now we just got a little bit more time. I want to talk about what I consider the third character and the one that I would have wanted as a pet when I was a little boy. The dragonfly.
Oh, the dragonfly, yes. So the dragonflies have been around since the wars happened. They were kind of surveillance cameras that they used. And Trip, because she's so tech savvy, she was able to reconfigure one so that they can use it to scan. And the great thing is everything that's tied to Monkey's headband, he can actually see. So the HUD system you see on the screen is through his eyes, which is great because he gets to see minefields and different objects that Trip cannot see, which is why in certain areas he has to help her get through because she can walk into a trap where he can actually see what's going on.
So the game camera is actually the dragonfly watching the game, you could say.
No, the dragonfly actually goes and scans ahead. It's normally, if you notice Trip, it'll be on her hair. It just sits there. And when they come into an area where they're not quite sure as to what's going on, or they see a lot of enemies and they want to figure out which route to take, they'll send them up. The dragonfly does a scan, and all those scanned objects come into Monkey's eyes. So basically, he gets to see them. And then they can plan out which direction is going to be the best for them to take.
Seriously, would a robot dragonfly pet be cool? I mean, yeah, I don't need the barrette part, but everything else, awesome. So anything else you need to tell us about Enslaved? When does it come out? And
it's coming out October 5th on both PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. We do have some pre-order DLCs with some of our retailers. We have three different skins, and each of them come with an ability. So you guys can check out our website, and they'll let you know exactly which retailer has those. For those retailers that don't have DLCs, we have an official soundtrack for the game by Nitin Sawhney, who's a really big composer out of the UK. And also, we created a custom Marvel comic book that's inserted in one of them. So we're really excited.
There you go. And if you happen to get a game with a golden ticket inside, you get to take home the life-size statues over there. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time.
No problem.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming out.
We'll be sure to come back and spend more time playing Enslaved. You should, too.
Uh-oh, where are we at now?
We are on the penultimate interview.
Uh-oh, what is it? It better be good. Tell me what it is. It better be something resurrected from my youth.
Well, I won't like it. Luck if you had a TurboGrafx 16.
Or Genesis.
Yeah, kind of.
I think this looks interesting.
Splatterhouse.
Splatterhouse.
Ah, and this is all about the gore, apparently.
Which is what I'm going to refer to my toilet as soon as we get back to the room.
The gore?
The gore.
The gorelet.
I haven't heard this yet.
Please, no one Photoshop the
gorelet. Let's go
into
the Splatterhouse. Let's hope it's not too long.
Hey everybody, this is Eric from Games Radar. I'm here with Dave Wilkins, the art director for Splatterhouse, and Dan Tovar, the producer. We're here to talk about Splatterhouse because you might not be paying as much attention to it as you need to, and we're here to fix that. I'm going to start with you, Dave. The game looks gorgeous, but it looks gorgeous in a way I haven't seen before. It's not quite cell shading, and it's not quite realism. What are you doing there? What is that?
Well, we're paying an homage to a lot of the old, 80s horror posters and that kind of art. So we're looking at, old comics, old Frazetta, also old Burning Rice and Swamp Thing, things like that. And trying to tune this graphic shader into something we haven't seen before,
A little bit of heavy black lines around in the washes of color. Yeah, now that you mentioned those two artists, it's totally obvious. Now, over to you, Dan. I don't know which of you guys are quite to blame, but this is the most savage, gory, blood-drenched game I've played in ages.
Yeah.
Tell us about this level we're in now. I played it, and it felt like one of the rooms was actually a microwave. What's the story there?
Yeah, well, it basically is. You basically fry the enemies, and they burst into lots of blood and guts. I mean, we got a lot of guys dedicated specifically to all the stuff that's inside that winds up outside. The limbs, the bodies, the organs, the blood. So, it's a mechanic that gets reinforced throughout this level. So you have to watch out for it, but you can also use it against the enemy. So it becomes like an environmental hazard.
And there was a door. Tell us about the doors.
We have a little bit of a twist on the old lock and key mechanism. The enemies wind up being the key, and the lock is an impalement point that you basically shove through various orifices on their body. It's pretty gnarly. I mean, we definitely try to up the over-the-top, tongue-in-cheek, just gnarly ways to kill shit,
So if I were to say, perhaps, butt plug chair, you'll have to play the game, honest. It's crazy.
It's not an official quote, but it's not really inaccurate either.
Right, so tell us about some of the other more savage things you can do in the game. There's a lot of really, in addition to that kind of room, give us some more examples of the kind of thing the player will find themselves doing.
One of the big things that we're focusing on is the splatter kills, which is basically the most brutal and goriest way that you can kill each of the classes of enemies. So, one guy, you're basically just, mashing his head together until blood is, squirting out his eyes and mouth, and eventually just, devastate his entire head, and there's just a geyser of blood that just starts spraying through the air. And I'm sure Dave's got a favorite, too.
Yeah, I'm going to say the zombie tear in half is probably my favorite, because, slow down and the zoom in of the intestines and everything, it's pretty epic. You really did work on that guy, so, yeah.
Dare I ask what kind of research you had to do to get that stuff animated right?
A lot of horror movies, a lot of horror comics, even just, listening to heavy metal, which is another theme for the game. It just puts you in a certain kind of mood. You just want to be brutal, you just want to tear stuff in half, like Dave said, snap some spines. We draw inspiration from a lot of the stuff that you'll be able to play through the game and I see what they're doing there, It's for people that are into that kind of stuff, it'll be obvious,
The SRB is hating you guys right now, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that one.
Fair enough. So let's just say probably not rated E at all. So speaking of inspiration, I wanted to make one more point. I saw, for fans, those of us who are old, we might have played the original Splatterhouse games. I seem to remember there was a boss in there that's sort of the worm kind of creature that drops down the small... That's in here as well, in a sort of an evolved form, yeah? Any of the other sort of levels or boss designs coming back that we can look for?
Yeah, absolutely. We use the original games as a blueprint for our design. So there's a lot of enemies and rooms and levels and characters that, you know, we use as inspiration in the music, too, because, I mean, it was a huge part of it. So there's a definite number of characters that we identified as critical to the franchise that we're bringing back.
Any of them you can tell us?
Absolutely. Biggie Man is back. Biggie Man is definitely back.
Tell them about Biggie Man, Dave.
Well, Biggie, you know, is the Rick's nemesis. He's like the guy with the chainsaw hands. We've seen tons and tons of iterations on that guy. But we're actually back to the original style, original design, and he's pretty scary dude in this game. Yeah. So old school is the way we're going. Yeah.
How scary a dude you have to make that guy look you know, threatened in any way? I don't know. I mean, he looks like me when I go to the gym and get my sweat on. So, all right. Anything else? Like, when's the game coming out? October, right?
It's fall for sure. Yeah, fall 2000.
Just fall so far. All right. More on Splatterhouse as soon as we can find it. You're spending all your time now just making blood, right?
We did spend a lot of time making blood. We got how many different shades of blood in the game?
We're not done yet. We got plenty of blood to go and different shades, the right hue of red. You know.
Is there an actual number of different shades?
I honestly couldn't count, but I know it's seriously over 20 different shades that we've tried to get. So, yeah.
20 different shades of blood. I'm done. I got nothing that can follow that up. Splatterhouse this fall, 20 different shades of blood only from these guys. Back to you, Internet.
All right. Uh-oh, is this almost over?
I think we're nearing the final one, which is...
I miss the DC Universe people. Like, I just tried to grab them. They're in multiple panels.
They're busy.
I love good comic talk at Comic-Con. It just makes sense.
It is good.
But this
speaking
is,
of comics.
Speaking of comics and speaking of characters, like...
Marvel vs. Capcom 3, what?
Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
They announced, six new characters now total over the course of the week. Most recent being Thor and Amaterasu from Okami, and they also announced Doctor Doom, Super Skrull, Trish from Devil May Cry, and Chun-Li. I did a quick write-up, and I didn't mean to come off as like anti-Chun-Li, but it's kind of like the most boring addition you could ever put in. It's like, yeah, of course she's in it. Like, and she was never like a big character in any of the Versus games as far as I remembered, but... I get why she's in there. I don't hate. I love Chun-Li.
Yeah, but no one's going, oh, my God, Chun-Li.
What about this? What else was announced there?
Earlier today, this Saturday, was Street Fighter Cross Tekken was announced, which mixes Street Fighter 4 characters in with some Tekken characters, and it's developed by Capcom. Screens are up. A trailer is out there. We can't process it because we are...
Are you serious?
Well, I can't do it from this location.
Okay.
And it's Saturday. No one's working in our office.
All right.
This ain't a global joint, even though it is.
I was going to say, I can do that. But let's go ahead and hear this interview that we haven't done yet. woo! Mr. Killian.
Yes.
You were asking if you could bitch. And I want to hear, like, well, very personal complaints. Here's my personal complaint of Comic-Con, which is something I don't want to see again. I don't want to see another overweight lady pushing her boobs up so hard that it looks like the blue veins in them are about to burst. I'm tired of running into those on the floor.
God bless them, though. Yeah. I mean, they're trying. You know, they're trying to make something happen there in the decolletage.
It's more than
decolletage.
I could ever do.
Yeah.
It's a commitment I could never do.
Exactly. Yeah. I think also another part of the Comic-Con sort of ecosystem that's unappreciated is the intentionally clueless reporters that show up every year and are like, what the hell's going on here? I don't know. It's so crazy. Who is this? I'm from a thing called Death Note.
It was adorable. Outside, I was just standing there, and this little girl, this like 10-year-old girl, is trying to explain to her father what G4 is. And she had to start all the way at video games. So he's never going to get it. So you play him on the TV. Dad.
There's this thing. It's called an electron.
Yeah.
We mix them together.
The magic all happens.
Capcom, we're following you right after what? There was a big panel?
Yeah. Were you guys in there right afterwards?
Brett was in there.
I hope we didn't jam you up because Ono-san had a few more things to say after they gave us the stop signal.
Oh, really?
I know.
No, I waited until everyone was getting off stage.
Okay.
So...
Oh, wait. Did you have a panel right after ours?
I went to the 12 to 1.
I totally misunderstood. You were just at the panel. Yes, I saw you there, of course. Yes, we were full of surprises today.
The big announcement was Street Fighter Cross?
Cross. Yes, Tekken. That is exactly how you say it. Thank you. It's not Versus. It's not a Versus game.
Why Versus? Yeah.
Well, because I don't know. Whatever. It's some sort of internal nonsense. There's not going to be a good answer to that question,
right.
But... the Versus games we think of as being more basically you have a super jump where you can fly 8,000
right.
feet in the sky
right.
and you know Ryu's fireball is like as big as the sun.
Right.
That's a Versus game. So that's how you know you got a Versus.
It's not a company thing, like since you're not bringing over Darkstalkers character and they're not offering you Soul Calibur characters.
This is a little fuzzy. I've had to explain this to at least 8 people internally as best I can. No, I mean it's our ridiculousness. So it's a question that deserves asking. Mm. And then the bottom line is I don't have a great answer, but it's Cross,
so
not
this,
Versus.
This is a bit more like the like Capcom versus SNK kind of stuff, where it's like the two styles kind of mishmash, but they don't get eccentric and crazy.
Now you're throwing off my example, because Capcom versus SNK was exactly a very Street Fighter style game that did not have any crazy super jumps or giant fireballs. So that blows it. Basically, we're inconsistent. This one's a cross. Please get it right. The hashtag on Twitter is SFXT.
I used it today.
Use it frequently. Yes. Catching on.
Did you show gameplay on the stage?
Oh, we did, actually.
Wow.
So, we didn't just have the CG movie. I think people might have been expecting something in terms of the announcement, but I don't think anybody was expecting to
see
the gameplay.
It's not often I walk into panels like that, like, not knowing completely...
Basically what you're going to get.
Pretty much what I'm... Like, I have a pretty good idea where they're going to announce
this.
It. But then when he's like... And now we're going to play it. Like, I'm as excited as everyone else. Like, no, he's not. He's lying.
There's not. There's not many panels that introduce anything or reveal anything anymore.
Yeah, we've been trying to, we're not able to reveal everything. We have a lot of panels this year. So, not everyone had a jaw-dropping revelation. Although we had something new, I think, at least everyone. And, the company has shifted focus over the last few years to really be more fan-facing and try and respect the efforts of everybody coming out to big events like this. So if they're here, at the bottom line, E3 is full of press, but not as full of fans. And the fans are the ones that pay the rent. So I really like that, and I like that Capcom's keeping the focus on consumer events like this.
I noticed during the fighting, it looked like Kazuya, even though he's now in a 2D plane, like a lot of his classic combos, I noticed were consistent, like the low kicks and the spinning backhand stuff.
The devil's hell kicks.
I didn't see the gameplay. I only saw the trailer.
Yes.
And the trailer was reminiscent of the Street Fighter 4 trailers.
Right.
So what does the gameplay look like?
The trailer looked like Street Fighter Super. Street Fighter 4.
Right. In the ink style.
Street Fighter 4.
Yeah. Only now you get the Tekken people kind of rendered in that style.
Yes.
So they look a little more Street Fighter 4, like more chiseled. And
I like that Chris's face actually looks a little hurt.
From playing just a little bit of the...
I showed you a screenshot.
Yeah, we didn't.
I didn't see it.
We didn't release the didn't release the gameplay footage, so that was just for the people at the show. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of handycam footage getting out.
This is the kind of shit you'd always talk about. Like, what if they do? What if they put these characters in this game?
I know.
There was a lot of smack talking between it. Well rehearsed smack talking between the two companies, but it really seemed like Tekken was getting stepped on a lot in there.
That's exactly right. So Ono and Harada are old friends, and actually I. Michael Murray, who is Harada-san, he's also a designer on Tekken.
Mm.
I've known him for quite some time. He's a great guy as well. So there's a healthy level of disrespect in the best possible way.
How about competition?
Yes.
Which is what both games are about anyway.
That's right.
Yeah, so now Ryu gets to win the Iron Fist tournament.
That's correct.
And
Kazuya gets to be the devil.
And
of
then
the
close it, yeah.
yeah.
But
right.
to talk deeply about the games,
around.
Like what do you think... Outside of this game, what the biggest difference is between Super Street Fighter 4 and one of the Tekken series?
Mm. Well, I mean, in general, between Street Fighter and Tekken?
Yeah.
Well, Tekken, I think, to its benefit and also to its detriment, depending on what kind of things you like, doesn't really have as much of a range game. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're not really in each other's face, there's not as much happening. So, to me, that's why the hallmark of a Street Fighter game and why that was such an important focus for me in 4 was to bring back sort of the power of the fireball, because I think it's one thing that the Street Fighter series has always done well. You know, we talk about it in terms of controlling space. You're basically, you know, if you're just doing a fireball and it's just part of an auto combo or something, that's whatever. But if I throw a sonic boom out on the screen and now you have to react to it, so now the sonic boom is out there, but now I can move again. So maybe I'm going to jump in at you while the sonic boom is out there. Maybe I'm going to use it to try and walk in and throw you. It creates, I start to get nerdy here, but like different vectors of attack.
Yeah.
And really that's what Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is all about too. It's not specifically about fireballs per se, but using the assists to call out. So basically while one assist is doing one thing, you're trying to dash to the other side and be high or low and confuse the opponent's block or just do a lot of chip damage and different strategies like that. Whereas Tekken is more about a high, low, mid kind of guessing game and counters and ranges and things that it's more about, you know, I think the Tekken fans really introduced the sort of frame counting stuff that you've heard. Like, I have +3 on block. That's certainly in Street Fighter, but I think most of the Street Fighter fans learned that terminology from the Tekken guys because that's a lot of the game revolves around that. Like,
and there's also, there was quick word of Tekken cross Street Fighter, but that's, I guess, even farther out than this.
That's, I think, going to come later, yeah. Okay. So there will be a Namco 6... Or excuse me, a Tekken 6 Namco-powered version of the game as well with
Skullamania.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see which characters. That's the cool thing is that there's been a lot of creative freedom given to both sides in terms of which characters they wanted to see and in terms of gameplay.
What's the guy, Dr. D?
Doctrine Dark.
Doctrine Dark. That's what I was thinking of.
Are you gonna terms of finding a cohesion with both fight styles? Or is there going to be a middle ground, or is one going to have to adapt to the other?
You know, we're really not trying to strike a middle ground. So in a lot of ways, I'll say this. So Street Fighter Cross Tekken still has a lot of surprises yet to come.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of characters, but in terms of mechanics and everything like that. But the basic gameplay is going to look more like a Street Fighter game. It's that sort of 3D models and a 2D plane. And I assume, I haven't seen anything on the Namco product, but I assume that's going to see more of the Street Fighters in like a Tekken 6 style environment.
Does that mean no pointy hair?
We don't know how the physics are going to go yet. So we'll see if that's going to be like a next generation thing or if we're able to get the hair right on
We're running up against the clock. We're about to get kicked out of our booth here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I did want to briefly touch on Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Online Edition. What's up with that?
It's pretty much as advertised, so we're still a long way out from that one as well. We just started work on it, but basically expect Street Fighter 3 Third Strike.
This is like an XBLA thing, or
I think it's going to be a digital product. Okay. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I think that's correct.
I was just lamenting. I was showing a guy in our office who doesn't play Street Fighter at all. Uh-huh. Old Charlie Barrett, and he was... Usually I'll end up watching some kind of Street Fighter match, and he'll turn around and be like, "Are you watching Street Fighter matches again?" Like, no, this one's cool.
Yeah.
But then one day I was looking at just animated all the sprites of Street Fighter 3, and he was like, "Wow, what are those?" I was like, "That's Street Fighter 3. What do you see, Elena? Look at all this stuff." And he's like, "That is really cool." And just the visual look, and I was like, it's kind of sad that's gone forever. But so then when that was announced, like, I'm so glad a new wave of people can see that.
Nothing has ever gone forever at Capcom.
It's like the prettiest game ever made or something. It is so well animated.
It is really very carefully, beautifully animated, and so we're going to try and bring that back and do the whole HD, filter look to really brush it up and make it sparkle on your HDTV.
Just before we let you off the hook, Mega Man Universe, I need to know something other than the nothing I know and the awesome trailer I saw.
Yes.
What is it? Did we do that? Was there an announcement? I don't know.
I don't actually know what they announced at the panel, so I know a few things that they probably shouldn't have said
said.
I'm not the one to repeat those, but Mega Man Universe is, I don't think, the MMO that some people were expecting when they heard the name. But there's going to be a lot of fun stuff for Mega Man fans and some creative opportunities
Looked
for them.
Like Capcom powers to me, and that makes me excited.
Yeah, there's going to be nonsense.
So people will probably check out PAX, I'm guessing?
Yeah, we'll definitely have more to say about that game at PAX.
Cool.
And it's going to be rad. So I'm actually really looking forward to that game.
Awesome. Killian, we love you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Seth Killian may be one of the greatest human beings in the world, assuming he actually did the interview.
He did. He did. Confirmed with our past.
Okay.
He did.
Okay.
I played MVC3, and then they did a quick play demo of Namco Street Fighter Tekken game names.
But I caught up with him at the Capcom party they had, and I was just like, look, I'm not like fan gushing, but I'm just saying, when you do commentary on games, it's the most legitimate I ever hear anything sound in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really proud of Seth during Evo. Like, really sells that shit hard. Evo, everybody. Evo 2011.
Evo,
2011.
Look, I don't want to get excited. I'm ready to get out of Comic-Con. How
All
about
right,
you?
Let's go bye.
All right. I'm going to, just because I bought a gobo, here's a Fraggle Rock song to end everything with. Hooray for me.
Comic-Con.
Very good, Don Fraggle.